Daf Gimel Amud Beis, and we're discussing the concept of being careful about controlling one's use of language and to avoid a Dabar Maguna. So the last thing we had here was a story about two students in front of Rav. They wanted to discuss how tired, how exhausted they were. So one of the students compared it to a sleepy pig, if you remember. So Rav decided, I'm not dealing with this guy anymore. I saw in the Mefarshim, they say that for 30 days, Rav didn't speak to him. Because 30 days is a shear of cherim. You know, when you put someone in cherim, stav cherim is shloshim yom. Okay, so what we're up to is another story about two Talmidim. And you'll see this is exactly parallel to Tosus Dibra Maskil V'Ano. Hanu Trei Talmidi Davi Yasme Kami Dehillel. Okay, so now let's give a little bit of background, to a little bit of introduction. There's something called Machshirim L'Tumah. Machshirim L'Tumah means that a foodstuff gets wet, it comes in contact with any of seven liquids, then it becomes mukshal lekabel tuma, which means that if a sheretz falls on that, let's say, wet fruit, that fruit is mekabel tuma. And the classical case of something that's royal lekabel tuma and it has the liquid element to it is what's called zeisim v'anovim, grapes and olives. Now, you have to know a little bit of the lingo here, because in Hebrew, there are two different words for cutting down grapes and olives. In the case of grapes, which is called anovim, the word is bitzira. And I say this because otherwise we won't be able to figure out this Gemara. So that's a technical word for removing the grapes from the grapevine. And then there's something called zeisim. Then there's something called olives. And with regard to olives, the word is not bitziras anovim, but there's no such thing as bitziras zeisim, but rather it's called mesika. Okay, so the word mesika is a technical word that refers to the olives. So you have the grapes, and that's called bitziras anovim, and then you have the olives. Now, the Gemara, at the end of the first parak of Masechet Shabbos, has various gzeros that were instituted at the time of Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. And especially Beit Shammai were very eager to avoid situations of tumah if it was only possible to do so. So Beit Shammai made a gzera. And at that time, the Gemara says the halach is like Beit Shammai against Beis Hillel. And that gzera was that for Betziras HaNovim, you must have what's called Kelim Tahorim. In other words, we have to make a gzera to make sure that the HaNovim, that the grapes did not receive tumah. And how do we avoid such a thing? We make sure that the utensils that are used for Betziras HaNovim, so you take down the grapes from the grapevine and you put them into kalim. These kalim have to be kalim tahorim. The Gemara says that Beit Shammai instituted no less than 18 gzeros, and we accept them l'halacha. These are the Shmona Esrei gzeros of Gazru Beit Shammai. Many of them have to do with Tumah V'Tara, and one of them is with regard to Betziras HaNovim. And there are going to be two Talmidim who are going to ask a question here. Why does Beit Shammai isolate Betziras HaNovim? Why not institute the same gzera for Mesika Zeisim? What's the difference between HaNovim and Zeisim? So Hanu Trei Talmidi Daviyasve, there were two students who were sitting, Kamei de Hillel. According to this version, they were sitting at the feet of Hillel. And one of these two was none other than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now, at that point in life, he was a youngster. he wasn't Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, the main giant, the Torah leader of his generation. At that time, he was a young fellow. Hillel was the giant of that generation. Now, according to the second version of the Gemara, Amri lay, others say that this same story took place, but not at the feet of Hillel, but rather Kami de Rebbe, at the feet of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And one of these two students was not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but rather Chavinai Rabbi Yochanan. It was the Talmud of Rebbe, whose name was Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was that transition period between the Tanoim and Amorim. So he was a Talmud of Rebbe. Now both of them would ask the same question, but with a different choice of words. Chad Amar, one of them said, "Mipnei ba botzrim betara." Right, we said the botzrim is referring to grapes. Why is it that we have to make sure that the liquids that come out of the grapes will not be machshirim, and therefore Beit Shammai made this gzera that the kelim have to be kelim tahorim, because otherwise, immediately with the betzira, since some of the liquid comes out, the anovim, the grapes, would immediately contract tumah. But if he ain't moskim betara, but we don't require the same parallel requirement of a kli for mesikas zesim, meaning when we cut the olives off the olive tree, we never required, Beit Shammai never required that there should be a kli tar. And this is a pella, because just like in the case of anovim, there are liquids that come out inevitably when you cut down the anovim, so too, when you harvest the zesim, the olives, they're so they're going to be liquids. Why wasn't Beit Shammai worried about that? So that's the way it was formulated. Notice that in presenting the contrast between Betzira Sanovim and Sika Zesim, in both cases, he uses the word Tahara. But in one case, he says we didn't require Tahara, meaning Kelim Tahorim. In the other case, we required Kelim Tahorim. V'chanomer, but the other student said, "Bipnei ma botzrim betara umoskim betuma." Now that's not really accurate. It's not really true that moskim betuma. Moskim betuma is not really so. It's just that Beit Shammai didn't go as far as to require, with regard to mezika zaysim, that the kelim that in which we put the zaysim have to be tahorim. But instead, he used the word tuma. Now again, if you recall, the word tumah is not such a bad word. It's not a lashon maguna, but it's not the finest word. It's not lashon ma'ula. Remember we spoke about lishna ma'aliyah yesterday. So lishna ma'aliyah would be when you use the word tahara, but not when you use the word tumah, because the word tumah has all sorts of associations which are negative in nature. Omar. So the Rebbe made a declaration. Now who is the Rebbe? See the Hillel Rebbe. Muftachani Bozeh, the one who used the word Tahara twice, and he deliberately avoided the Tumah, I'm sure about him, I can predict about him, Sheh Mora Hora Bisrael, he will be a Mora Hora, he will be a Posek for the generation of Israel. And the punchline of this story, the postscript, if you will, is V'lohoy Yomimu Otim HaChahora Hora Bisrael. Again, who are we talking about? Either we talk about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in the first version, or we talk about Rabbi Yochanan in the second version. They became, or he became, whoever that he is, a Mora Hora B'Yisrael. So what we learn from this is that the deliberate consideration of what words come out of your mouth, and in this case to make sure that you use a Lashon Ma'aliyah, is something that's indicative of the depth of a personality of a person. By the way, Phil, I didn't get a chance to open up yet. You know.
There was 10 examples of exactly this.
Oh, wow.
To say something.
All right, so give me just another day.
Yesterday
was a very,
I'm
very
smiling
packed
because,
day.
Because yeah. This is exactly
Now another story. Hani Tlosa Kahani. There were three Kohanim that were standing in the Beis HaMikdash, and they were discussing the portion of the Lechem HaPonim that they received. You know, the Lechem HaPonim, which was placed on the Shulchan from Shabbos to Shabbos, would be divvied up when you took down last week's Lechamim, the 12 Lechamim, and you and you replace them with the fresh lechamim, the old lechamim were then divvied up amongst the kohanim. And basically, the kohanim would receive, because there wasn't that much here, you know, there was a whole mishmeres of kohanim, and they had to divvy up 12 loaves of bread amongst the entire mishmeres. So each one is telling about the fact that I didn't receive what's called a kizayis. Let me explain. Normally in kodshim, we have a principle of ein achila pachus mikizayis. For example, when, let's take the case of a korban shlomim, the kohanim get their portion and the Yisrael gets their portion. So it would be a kizayis. But in lechem aponim, because of the very limited nature and the rights to many, many myriads of kohanim to get from that limited levels, that they each received a portion that was very small. And when they were discussing it amongst themselves to try to sort of compare, you know, their small portion to something else, so listen what they each said respectively. Chadomar, one of them said, Lahu, he said to the other two, Higiani Kipul, the amount of the lechem upon him that I received is like the size of a bean. And he was trying to convey the message that it was less than a kezias, and yet he was mekayim the mitzvah of achilas lechem upon him, which we'll discuss in just one moment. Chanomer, the other one, said, Higiani ki kezias. I was able to get a full kezias worth. Vechadomer, and one wanted to complain about the small piece that he got. Higiani kizonav halta. I got like the size of the tail of a sheretz, of some sort of a crawling creature. Does anybody have an English translation?
A lizard.
A lizard. Okay, excellent. A lizard. The tail of a lizard. That's not exactly the right way to talk about lechem aponim.
Why would he even say that?
Because, as we'll soon see, he was not really a kohen. He was an imposter. Okay, so you have to hold on until you get to the punchline of the sugya. Now, let me just take a moment of your time to discuss this issue about how you can fulfill the mitzvah of achilas lechem aponim on something that's less than a kezias. Again, one of the three got a kezias worth. The other two didn't even get a kezias worth. Kepul alavan, like a small bean, that's less than a kezias. So on this, we have a chiddush of the Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yosef Ben Brisker. He says that the mitzvah here is not what we call the Chovas Gavra, but rather the Cheftish V'Necha. Let me explain. We can always differentiate between two types of mitzvah of achila. One achila, like for example, matzah, means that I have a Chovas Gavra. I have to implement a Mais Achila. Mais Achila requires a minimum of what? Kizayis. Nothing less than Kizayis will do. But with regard to Kodshim, and particularly Lechem Aponim, the mitzvah is not the Mais Gavra, it's not the achila, but that the kodshim should be nechal, it should be eaten. It's like, if I don't know if it's a good mashal, charoses. What do you do with charoses on the table? Do you eat it? Yes and no.
You dip in it.
So that means that the charoses is like a nechal. You know, so you don't have to eat a kezias of charoses. Karpas is an issue in the poskim. Now a minig is to eat less than a kezias. The Rambam has a kezias of karpas. The Rambam holds that there's a chovas gavra to mais achila that's required in karpas, and therefore ein achilu pochus mikazais. Our meaning is not like the Rambam. We want just to see that the karpas is nechal, you know, that it's brought out to the shulchan. It's part of the, you know, the shinuyim, the all the different things that are meant to arouse the curiosity of the children. But there's no mais achilu.
Did the Rambam make a bracha acharona after the karpas?
No. Oh yes, according to the Rambam. Well, he should. I don't know. I can't tell you for sure that he did, but he should. Right. In any event, I'm just giving you this as a marshal. There's something called an achila, and then there's something called a chefta nechal, where the object has to be eaten. And the difference is going to be whether each individual has to eat his eyes. If the individual and each one of the individuals is obligated in a chovas gavra, the mais achila, then there's no achila poksman kizayis. But if it's only a din that the object should be eaten, right, it should be a nechal, then we divvy it up into the smallest portions and the kohanim eat it. At the end of the day, the lechem aponim was nechal. So that's the mitzvah. So each one of these amoraim is saying that you know, I got a small portion, but that's okay. That doesn't undermine the mitzvah of achilus lechem apayim. The same Beis HaLevi is very famous for saying that Korban Pesach, you know, the Beis HaLevi was one generation before Reb Chaim. He was Reb Chaim's father. Reb Chaim is known to be the Mechadesh, like he innovated this new Derech HaLimud. But the truth is that his father already planted the seeds. So one of the most famous examples they give between Gavra and Cheftza, which is something that Reb Chaim made into a whole enterprise, already was presented as an insight of the Beis HaLevi, Reb Chaim's father, Reb Yosher Ber. He said that in Korban Pesach you have two different mitzvahs. One mitzvah of the Korban Pesach is a Chovas Gavra for the Maisa Achila, and that requires a Kezayis. And then there's a mitzvah that should be a Nechal, that the Korban Pesach should be consumed, because otherwise it becomes Nosar. And that's how the Beis HaLevi wanted to explain that in Korban Pesach we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah that has to be eaten before Chatzos. But yet, paradoxically, it doesn't become Nosar until the next morning. So if, let's say, you would eat less than a kezayis of Korban Pesach before Chatzos, you have not fulfilled your obligation. But if, let's say, you ate a kezayis, and there is still leftover Pesach, now you just divvy it up so that it should be a nechal, and each person might get less than a kezayis, but as long as it's eaten before it would become Nosar, then you fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, in the footnote here, he doesn't quote the Beis HaLevi, but he quotes the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai is more of a philosopher. He wrote extensively on the Agadita of the Gemara of Shas. So he writes here in the name of the Ben Ish Chai, Shahoyelo Lomar Sheyeh Chasid V'lama Mora Hora. He asks the following question, that the Gemara seems to put an emphasis here on something that's ethical, and the reward for that is that he's designated to be intellectual. Meaning, the word for ethical greatness is chassid. The word that's appropriate, the adjective that's appropriate to describe intellectual genius is mora hora. They could even paskin shilas. Why is it that whether it was Hillel or whether it was Rebbe, that they were able to determine based on chassidus, based on an ethical exceptional, in this case, matter of speech, something about intellectual genius, that he would be a mora hora? So he says the following. He quotes the Tashbetz, Sherak Rav Litalmido Tzarch Lakatsu Vidvarov Kidesh Lo Yite HaTalmid Afal Pishal Shem Kach Omer Dover Meguna Aval HaTalmid Yarech Kidesh Lo Lomar L'Rav Dover Meguna. He says the following, that when a Rebbe is teaching a Talmud, he has to make sure that everything is crystal clear, and even if he has to use a term that's not so pure, it's a little bit coarse, and it's a Dover Meguna, he's allowed to do so because he has to make sure that he teaches the Torah in the clearest way possible, and he has to be, as we said yesterday, abbreviated. So for the sake of clarity and Lekatzer B'dvarim, the Rebbe will sometimes use a word that is a little bit of a Dover Meguna. Like, for example, he'll say something is Talmud. But now the Talmud is responding to his Rebbe, or he's asking a question to his Rebbe. He doesn't have that obligation to avoid any lengthy speech and make it as abbreviated as he possibly can. And therefore, he really is allowed to be marich. But once he's allowed to be marich and use extra words, then his obligation to avoid a Dover Meguna is even greater than that of the Rebbe. The Rebbe, for the sake of clarity, when he's transmitting the Torah, he doesn't have to be careful about Dover Meguna. His main concern is Lekatzer B'dvarav, to make sure that the Talmud understands and he doesn't misunderstand. So he's not going to go out of his way to look for longer words to avoid a Dover Meguna because he might sacrifice the clarity. But in the case of the Talmud, he is totally dedicated to Al Yotze Adam Dover Meguna Mipiv. on the intellectual level, he doesn't have to worry about being makatzer b'dvarim. He could use an arichas dvarim in order to avoid enunciating a davar maguna. From the fact that he, well, we don't know who it was, whether it was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai or Rabbi Yochanan, was marich, right? And instead of saying moskim betuma, he said ein moskim betara, in order to avoid a dov maguna. He did so because of the kavod. When you speak to a Rebbe, you have to speak in a certain way. You have to choose your words very carefully, and even if it means lengthy speech, but to avoid using coarse language, that's what you have to do. And therefore, nimtzeh shekibed es rabo. That really, what happened here is Rabbi Yochanan was being mechabed his Rebbe. Shebevadei lo yite. He certainly knew that the Rebbe is not going to make any mistakes over here. And therefore, b'schar ze zochel lahoros, he became a mora hora mida keneged mida. And now we get to another story. I'm sorry. Now we get to the end of the story about that one Kohen who said that he received a size, a portion of the Lechem Apanim, which was the size of the tail of a lizard. Badku Acharav. They checked out this Kohen who used such a terrible language regarding the Lechem Apanim. What a chutzpah neira. And guess what? They checked out to see what his yuchsin is. You know, does he really belong in the Migdash, in the Beis HaMikdash, as a Kohen Ovid, and receiving the Lechem upon him? U'matzav bo shem es posel. And indeed they found that he was not a kosher Kohen. He was an imposter. He was presenting himself as if he was a Kohen kosher, but in fact, he was the product of an illegitimate marriage, in which his father married a divorcee. And when a Kohen marries a Grusha, the child of such a marriage is not a Kohen. He has the status of a Chol. He's not allowed to do the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. This fellow, whoever he was working in the Beis HaMikdash. We have a principle that anyone who's working in the Beis HaMikdash, we don't check out his Yichus. Why? Because we assume that somewhere back in his earlier ancestry, they checked him out and they knew that he was a kosher Kohen. And that's called Vaha, this is the language of a Mishnah, Ein Bodkim in a Mizbech L'mala. That if somebody is working, he's a Kohen working in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbech, we don't have to be Bodeki, we don't have to check him out, we don't have to see if his mother married a Kohen and she was a, you know, it was a first marriage for her and so forth and so on. The very fact that he's working in the Beis HaMikdash is proof positive that somewhere along the line they checked him out. And if you're telling me that this guy was working in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbeach and we checked him out, we found him to be apostle, then that undermines the whole chazaka, the assumption that we can rely on the fact that he's working in the Mikdash. So the Gemara says that maybe we have to reformulate. Lo tema, don't say that they found the Shemitz Pasul. It's not that he was a, what we call a psul yuchsin, right, that he was a cholol, because his mother was a grusha and she married a Kohen. Ela ema, but rather say shachatz pasul. The word shachatz means an arrogant, coarse person, a gas ruach. Now, what does that mean? We have to get rid of him because we have to disqualify him as a Kohen because he's arrogant? So Rashi, if you take a look, Shachatz Pasul says the following. Hu atzmo hayagas ruach. It's not that we checked out his yichus, but he himself was a gas ruach. He himself was very coarse and very, you know, he used very derogatory terminology to describe the Lechem Apanim. And that's called Mevazei Kodshe Shamayim. He humiliates and disgraces that which is Hegdesh. The Ein Roy L'Shamish. Such a Kohen who is disgraceful to Hegdesh, he has no respect for Hegdesh, for Kodshim, he should not be serving in the Beis HaMikdash.
Even if he was a Kohen.
Even though he's a Kohen Kodshim. And how do I know that, says Rashi? Kedekaimelon, I'm going to quote to you Gemara Masechta Menachos. And the Gemara says that Avodah Mesura L'Bnei Aaron, Who is Bnei Aaron that the Avodah is Mesura lo, meaning that the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash is given over to him, and it's coming to exclude a Kohen She'eino Moda B'Kulon. He says the Kohen doesn't accept and acknowledge the significance, the, shall we say, infinite divine significance of Kodshim, of Hegdesh, even if it's the lowest of the avodos, like eating kipul alavon of the lechem aponim, is ainlo. The Gemara says ainlo chelik bekuhun. He's not allowed to serve as a kohen in the mikdash. Ibai, same. The Gemara gives a second interpretation. Einochinami, they checked him out and they found him to be a cholol. But shiny hasim to iu di aria nafshe. This is a different rule. As a general rule, a person serves on the mikdash, we assume they checked him out and his yichus is fine. But in this case, he brought upon himself, right, iu na nafshe, on himself, an ira. Ira is miloshon reusa. Reusa means when you have a chazaka, an assumption about someone, and then you have a reusa, you begin to suspect that maybe the chazaka in this case is not reliable. That's called a reusa. Like, for example, a classical case of a reusa would be when a man, you know, back in the day, that erisin and then nisuin a year later. So after the nisuin, he takes her into his house and he has the first intimacy, and he finds that she doesn't have pesulin, and the Pesach is Pasuach, so that's a reusa, that maybe she had some sort of relationship which was illegitimate. That's called a reusa. So every woman has a chazaka that she's kshera until we know otherwise. Well, for example, let's say you were bodek your house, you did a bedika, and then all of a sudden you find a piece of chametz. That's a reusa. In other words, the chazaka tells me that if you did a good bedika, that there's no chametz there, but now I found a piece of chametz. If that undermines the whole chazaka, then you might have to check the whole house, even though you only found one piece of chametz. Here, iu di aria nafshe, he himself brought about a reusa from the fact that he has these midos megunos. it's despicable. It's almost nivel peh that he speaks about the lechem aponim as if it was a sheretz tameh. Then we have to check him out. Now we can't. Obviously, some chazaka is unreliable. Now, since we're talking about using or misusing kodshim, so the Gemara tells another story. And here's again a story where they check someone out and they found that he was an imposter. Hahu arma'a. There was a guy. The word for guy in Aramaic is an arma'a. Now this guy thought he was a big shot, and he decided that he's going to figure out a way of presenting himself as a Jew in order that he could eat from the Korban Pesach. So he lived in Chutz Laretz, but he came, Havisolik v'ochil psach in Yerushalayim. He showed up in Yerushalayim on the day of Pesach and presented himself as a Jew. And apparently the halacha is that we don't have to check out a person's credentials if he shows up and asks to eat from the Korban Pesach. We invite him in, called Ditzrif Yesev Yifsach. You know, we invite him in to be part of the Chabura so that he could partake in the Korban Pesach. When this guy returns from Yerushalayim, he starts boasting about the fact that he ate from the Korban Pesach. The Omar, he declares, Ksiv, your Torah says, Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo, that a foreigner, meaning a non-Jew, is not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. Kol orel lo yochal bo, that someone who's not circumcised is not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. Ana, and you should know about me, Haka achilna mishufre de shufre. I ate the best part of the lamb, of the Paschal lamb. See, he was boasting about the fact that he fooled the Chachamim. Now, in that area, in Chutz Laretz, which is called Nitzivin, there was a gadol by the name of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Mika safulach me alya. Did they give you the best of the best? Now the alya is somewhere in the hindquarters. Does he tell you exactly how to translate it?
It says fat tail.
Fat tail. Oh, that doesn't help me much. Anyway, so we'll call it the alya. But the alya apparently is the most tasty part of a lamb. But we don't eat it. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra wanted to trick this Armah so that back in Yerushalayim they would discover that he was a fake. He was an imposter. He was presenting himself as a Jewish person when he was not Jewish. So he says, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra turns to this Armah who's boasting and he says, did they give you the best of the best? Did they give you the Aliyah? Amaleila. He said, that I didn't get. I didn't get the Aliyah. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra continues. He says, "Kisalkis lahasim." Next time you go up to Yerushalayim, Emole, tell the Kohanim, "Sfuli me'alya, give me from the alya." And the alya is burnt on the mizbeach, and it's not a part that's given to people to eat. Now, in the footnote here, he says that El Yosa, the Alya, is Kreva. That's what Rashi says. And Tosus, Divya Maskel, the Alya, says that Bigdi Eina Alya Kreva. Bekom Pesach, Bogam Min HaGdi. So in the case of a Gdi, we don't take an Alya and bring it on the Mizbeach. So Bekom Pesach could also be from a Gdi. So Tosus says that Rov Pischem Hayu Mitle, that in most cases they use the lamb for Pesach, even though you could use a goat. And the lamb is halach that the aliyah of a lamb cannot be eaten, but it has to be burnt on the mizbeach. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra is setting this guy up for being discovered. Why? Because Kisolik, when he came back to Yerushalayim the next year for the Korban Pesach, Amalahu, he told the people there, may aliyah suffer, please pass me the aliyah. What are you talking about? The alya is brought on the mizbeach. It's not divvied up for eating. So they said to him, why would you ask for an alya? Did somebody tell you to ask for an alya? He told me to ask for an alya. No less of a person than Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. So they talked amongst themselves. My high de kamon. What was the intention of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra? Why would he want to get this guy into trouble? There must be something rotten in Denmark. So Bodku Basrei, they checked out this guy, Vashkechu the Armahu, and they disclosed that he was in fact an imposter, he was not Jewish at all. Vikatluha, and they put him to death. Now in truth, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra could have put him to death, but I guess Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra didn't have the ability to put him to death. So that's why he set up this whole trick. Now, why was he put to death? We'll get to that in just a minute. Sholchu le Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Shalom lecha, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Peace be with you. Di'at ben Netzivin. You're in a city called Netzivin. U'mitzudascha, but your nets, prusa, they stretch out all the way to Yerushalayim, and we were able to trap this guy in the net because of your ingenious chach. So now let's take a look at Tosvis. Dibra maskel me'alya mika safulach. And we're going to look at line 4 in Tosvis. From Yehuda ben Becerra lo ala l'regel. Tosvis is implying the following question. Why is it that this guy went up to Aliyah L'Regel to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyah? Not that he was obligated, but I'm saying all the Jews went up and Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra didn't go up. He remained in Netzivim. Now, Tosfos is also implying another question, because if Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra didn't make Aliyah L'Regel, he didn't eat from the Korban Pesach. So he's really violating two mitzvahs. Number one, the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, and number two, the mitzvah achilas ha-pesach, which is a very severe issur. So Tosfos offers two answers. Yesh lama, the first answer is shlo hoya lo karka, that technically he was patur from the mitzvah aliyah l'regel, because the mitzvah aliyah l'regel, the Gemara establishes in Chagiga, is only for someone who possesses land. And then Tosfos says, Ozake, or maybe he was so old that it was difficult for him to walk. And the Gemara says in Chagiga that if you can't walk, then you're not chayv an aliyah l'regel. And the same din applies to Karban Pesach, k'mo re'iyah, that there's an equation between Karban Pesach and re'iyah, that if you're potter from re'iyah because einu yochel lahalich baragla, then you're likewise possible from Karban Pesach. So that's the first approach, that in fact Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira was not obligated in the mitzvah aliyah l'regel, nor in the mitzvah of Pesach, because he was so weak and old that he couldn't walk on his feet. No, Inam, Inatos has a sharper answer. And he says, Netzivin Chutzlaretzu. And the law is that the mitzvah aliyah l'regel, or eating from the Pesach, is only the kiruv makom, only if you're within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira was in a place called Netzivin, and Netzivin was located on the other side of the border, of the boundary. So it was not part of Eretz Yisrael, but it was part of Chutzlaretz. Now, why did they put this guy to death? So in order to answer that question, we have to ask a more fundamental question. Oh, wait, before we get to that, I forgot to tell you that in the previous sugya, when it says that this Kohen compared his lechem, his portion of lechem upon him to the tail of a lizard, and they checked him out, and they found a psul. So Tosa says, what was the psul that they found? Rashi says they found that his mother was a grusha, and she was married to a Kohen, and therefore he's a cholol. But Tosa says they checked him out, and they found the Shemitz psul. Pirush Rabbeinu Chananel, this is the fourth Tosa down from the top. Pirush Rabbeinu Chananel, Shemitz psul, you have it? Dvar Avodas Kochavim. Wow, this is wild. That they found out that this Kohen, who was very, you know, in a very repulsive way compared the Lechem Apodim, he was actually guilty of idol worship. And the law is that a Kohen who's guilty of idol worship is possible. He cannot work in the Migdosh. So the question is, what about Bodku Achram? It says, Bodku Achram, Matzvo Psul, Shemitz Psul. So according to Rabbeinu Chananel, it must mean that when they make a Bedika, they don't only make a Bedika about Yuchsin to see who his mother was and was she legitimately married to a Kohen or illegitimately married to a Kohen, but they also check out other things that could possibly undermine and disqualify the status of the Kohen for Avodah. And one of the things that I have to check out is, was it possible that there was some idol worship going on over here in this family? Or this Kohen was guilty of idol worship? So they checked that out, and guess what they found? That he was actually guilty of idol worship. Wow. How did he give himself away? Who would have suspected this Kohen of idol worship that they would check him out? And the answer is because he called it Kizan of Shalalta. Okay, now, what's the deal with a guy who eats Karban Pesach? The Torah says called Benecha lo yochal bo. What is that? Is that a mitzvah to the Kohen? I'm sorry, I keep saying Kohen. Is that an isur to the guy? How many mitzvahs does a guy have?
Seven.
Only seven. It doesn't say that there's an eighth mitzvah that he's not allowed to eat from the Karban Pesach. So the Rambam, and after the Rambam, the Sefer Chinuch, they say that the Isur is on a Yisrael, that a Jew is not allowed to feed a guy, he's not allowed to give the guy from the Karban Pesach. The Smag, on the other hand, holds it's an Isur on the guy, that the guy is not allowed to eat from the Karban Pesach. Now, again, the obvious question is, how is the Smag going to justify that there's an Isur on the guy to eat from the Karban Pesach? Where does that fit in to the seven mitzvahs? We only have seven. So we'll get back to that in just a minute.
But also gives the Jew responsibility to check everybody who comes to eat from his Karban Pesach.
Correct. Well, again, this is complicated, but if all things are equal, then we have a right to rely on Rove. So we can give out the, when this guy came, they gave him from the carbon pesach. Why didn't they check him out? So the answer is because we rely on Rove, that if a person presents himself for the carbon pesach, it must be that he's Jewish. This guy made a race on himself because he asked for the aliyah. But had he not asked for the aliyah, we would have relied on the fact that he's Jewish. It's interesting. I was thinking whether he grew a beard and payas. I don't know exactly what he did. Maybe he wore a big kippah sruga. I don't know exactly what this guy did to appear as a Jew. But now let's go with the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch. They hold that there's no Isser on the guy to eat from the Karban Pesach. The Isser here, the lav, is for the Jew to feed the guy Karban Pesach. So what should be the next question that we ask? Why did they put him to death? You know, if it was his violation, so we have a principle with regard to Ben Noah, that azarosam zuhi misosam. Now, what does azarosam zuhi misosam mean? It means that with regard to the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noah, any violation of any of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noah incurs a chi of misa. In other words, in Jewish halacha, we have a subdivision, a hierarchy. There are chayvei lavim, and chayvei krisus, and chayvei misus bezdin. But with regard to a guy, the principle is azarosam zui misasa. So, for example, if a guy is guilty of gzela, that's one of the seven mitzvahs, he's chayv misa. The Ramban in last week's parsha says that the Bnei Shechem were chayv misa because of dinim. They should have judged Shechem for what he did to dinim. Okay, fine. That's why they wiped out the whole city, Shimon Valibioi. So Bishlev, if you hold like the smag, that the guy is enjoined from eating from the Karban Pesach, that's his lav and his isur, then okay, they had to put him to death. But if you hold like the rabbi in the Sefer HaChinuch, that the Torah is addressing the Yisrael, that he's not allowed to feed the guy any part of the Karban Pesach, so why should they put the guy to death for that? So the Minchas Chinuch comes up with a wild idea. He says that L'shitas HaRama V'Chinuch Hargu Mishum Gezel Shebnei Noach Nitztavu Al Gezel, and we have a principle that Kodshim belongs to Gavoa, right, as a din of property or possession of Gavoa. That's why if you eat something without a bracha, the Gemara compares it to stealing from Hegdish. And he says that a Ben Noach is Nerag al Gezel. In other words, the Torah allows a Jew to eat from these kodshim. But otherwise, if you don't have that permission, then you're stealing from Gavoi. And the guy who doesn't have permission to eat from this Karban Pesach is stealing.
So they may not know that. The guy is not familiar with...
The guy himself quoted the Pasuk, if you remember. He quoted scriptures.
So he
knew that he was faking out the Jews. Did he know it was Gezel? That's a good question, Phil. Maybe Gezel means whenever you don't have rights to take something because it's not for you, it's not allotted to you, then that's Gezel. And the guy has to know that. That's also included under the principle of Azarosa and Zui Misosa.
Does this have anything to do with Megillah, or that's only...
With what?
Megillah, or that's only...
This is a case of stealing from Hegdish, is Megillah, but it's stealing, you know, it's Gezel. Then he quotes from Elchanan Wasserman, who wants to say that the Gezel here is not from Gavoa, not because the Karban Pesach belongs to Hegdish, but because of the Bnei HaChabura. In other words, he attached himself to a group. Now this group, which is called the Chabura Karban Pesach, they have exclusive rights to eat that particular lamb. And that's worth money. They own the lamb. And now there was a minui in which he joined the minui as if he was part of the Chabura, and that's called Gezel. Now, there's a Gemara in Chulin that says Ben Noach is also b'bnei me'ayim mishum evrim minachai v'rak Yisrael mutar u'pesach hoya tliyoso al krov v'kirbo u'bnei Noach chayav b'kolshu. Now again, I don't know enough about the sugyan chulin to explain this. I can just give you a general sketch. But it seems that when they took out certain of the innards from the lamb, and then later on they roasted it, that was still before the lamb was, you know, they extracted it from the lamb's body before the lamb had died, before the expiration date, if you know what I mean. And that's called Erev Min HaChai. Now, for a Jew, B'nei Me'ayim is not called Erev Min HaChai. Again, we'd have to know a lot more about Erev Min HaChai. But for a Goy, B'nei Me'ayim, those parts that they took out of the carbon pest from the inside of the lamb, that is called B'nei Me'ayim. And therefore, Ben Noach, who violates the Isur of Erev Min HaChai, is Chayav Kol Shehu. And if it's Nesinas Tam, then we apply the principle of Hazarosim Zui Misosim, and he's Nerag Mishum Erev Min HaChai. Then he quotes the Tzivu, says that he was Nerag because he went into the Azara Bituma. And that's pretty way out to say that a guy who enters into the Azara is therefore Chayav Misa. He says, you have to check out a sugya in Sanhedrin that Kohen Sheshimesh Bituma is Chayav Misa. Oh, I don't know enough about this. Anyway, just to summarize, we have four different answers to the question why they put him to death. One answer is because he violated an Isur, according to the Smag, of eating from the Korban Pesach. The second is that even if the Isur is only on the Yisrael and not on the guy was guilty of Gezel, either Gezel from Hegdesh or Gezel from the Bnei HaChabura. Then we had an answer based on the Baruch Chulin that this was Erev Min HaChai, and we have an Etziv who claims that by entering into the Azor Betuma, that itself generates a capital punishment. Now again, Tosfos asks why Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseri didn't go on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, to eat from the Korban Pesach. And Tosfos says that he didn't have karka, and therefore he was potur, or he was a zokain, and he couldn't go by his feet, or the tzivim was in chutz laretz. Now, the last answer, namely that the tzivim was located in chutz laretz, that explains why he didn't come to eat the carbon pesach. The first two answers, that he can't walk by his feet, or he doesn't own karka, that's only relevant to re'iyah, to the mitzvah aliyah l'regel. That's not really relevant to Korban Pesach. We told some Farshim, the Alfidim Pesach Mireir, who potter Gimel, the Chutzar Sloma Furish Begumara Klal. That we don't know that Chutzar is a psul in Korban Pesach, we're going to derive it from Re'iyah, and therefore all the dinim of Re'iyah and the candidacy for Re'iyah, for the mitzvah of Re'iyah, will apply to Korban Pesach as well.
Because it's in Turkey. I just looked it up.
It's in Turkey?
Oh. It was the home of Yehuda ben Batera.
Interesting. So that means that it was definitely in Chutzarts, and therefore he was potter from Re'iyah, and Tosus equates Re'iyah and Pesach, and therefore he was potter from the Korban Pesach. There's a whole gigantic controversy, I'll just mention it. This is one of the most famous machlokasim amongst the Achronim. Let's say you're in Chutz Laretz. Do you have an obligation to find yourself, to locate yourself close enough so that when Erev Pesach comes around, you'll be able to fulfill, you'll be included in the Chiyuv of Korban Pesach? And the Tzlach, that's the Nodav Yehuda, came up with a wild idea. He says that it all depends where you are in Erev Pesach. You have no responsibility before Erev Pesach, when there's no Chiyuv of Korban Pesach, to situate yourself on Erev Pesach. Bekiruv Makom, if you're Rachak from Koma, you don't have an obligation to set it up such that you'll be obligated to the Mitzvah of Pesach. The Minchas Chinuch is not happy with that. Okay, where are we up to now? Oh, here we have a story about Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana Cholash. Rav Kahana was very weak and sick. Shadru Rabbanan Rav Yeshua Berei de Rav Ivi. The rabbi sent Rav Yeshua and they sent him Omrule Zil Bedok Ma Dine. In other words, what's his situation? How bad is bad? Also Ashkechei Denof Nafshe. When he got there, he found that Rav Kahana had already died. Karei Lelevushe. The law is when a Rebbe dies, then the Talmud is chayev in Kriya, he has to rip his garment. But Vahadre Lekari Lachori, he turned the rip part inside, so that when he came to see the Rabbana and they would ask him how Rav Kahana is doing, they wouldn't immediately see that it was Kriya. Because that immediacy would cause them tremendous anguish. You know, when you have bad news to tell a person, you got to give them a little bit of a hint first. So instead, what he did was Bachi Viyasi. As he came, he was crying. Amrule, then they understood the message, Nach Nafshe, that Rav Kahana had died. Amalahu, Ano Loka Imna. I didn't tell you that he died. And why not? Because the Pasuk of Mishlei says, Umotzi Diba Huksil. That a person who brings bad news is a ksil. He's considered like Ksil in Shlomo HaMelech's Lashon is a very negative attribute. It's like a cynic, or he's idiosyncratic. In other words, you shouldn't... Again, you have to tell a person. Like, for example, if a person has to go to the Levaya, you can't deny him the information. You know, he's a relative, he's a friend, he wants to give respect to the dead. But do it in a way that you don't have to say it directly, that he'll understand... Because Motzi Diba Huksil. Another story. Yochanan Chakukah, Yochanan who came from the city of Chakukah, Nafik Lekaryasa, he went out to the smaller villages to see if there is tvua, in other words, if there's produce. Ki Asa, when he got there, Amrule, they said to him, Chitim Nasu Yafos. He wanted to find out if the wheat had grown properly. Ha'olehem. So instead, the answer was, Si'orim nasu yofos. Instead of answering the question about chitim, they sort of like paid, you know, this is what we call in Yiddish, machnish visendik, you know, as if they didn't know what he was asking. They said to him, oh, the si'orim were very beautiful. Meaning, they didn't want to say directly that the chitim are in bad shape. They didn't want to be motzi diba ra, as we said before. They didn't want to say something which brings like a dvar klala mipiyem, you know, that there was a curse, that there was no good wheat crop. Amulet say ubasar lesusim lechamorim. He said to them, you know, that's good news for the horses and the donkeys that eat barley. They're going to be very happy about this. This pasuk is in Malachim, I think. Let's see if I'm right. L'rechash. Basically, he was implying in a very cynical way that they didn't give the proper answer to his question. And you know, if you're answering me about the quality of the barley, then go tell it to the donkeys and the horses. So the Gemara asks, "My havile lemeimar?" In other words, he wanted a direct answer about chitim, but the chitim went sour. So they don't want to say that. So what could they have said? So the Gemara answers is shtaked nasu chitin yofos. Last year's crop was good. In other words, not to tell that this is animal food, right? Fodder for animals. That's like a dover maguna. But they should have implied that this year's crop was not as good as last year's crop, and he would have gotten the message. Inami, what they could have said was adoshim nasu yofos. Adoshim, which are lentils, that's already human food that's to be consumed by human beings, and that's not, you know, you don't have to mention the animals, you know, that this is animal food.
This use of language,
and now I think we're up to daf dalet omen aleph.
This use of language and the importance of use of language. What happens if somebody is like an aide, a witness?
A witness would be like a rebbe that we said before, that everything is dependent upon clarity. You know, don't look for, you know, how can I avoid using words, right, and use, right, and implying and hints.
Yes.
So clarity is the most important point.
Okay.
Now the Gemara here in Daf Dalid is discussing someone named Aibo, as we'll soon see. Aibo is the son of Rav Acha, who came from Kafri, and Aibo was born from the first marriage of Rav Acha. Then he had a half-brother by the name of Rav Chia, whose mother was Rav Acha's second wife. So basically, we're talking about Rav Chia and Aibo as paternal brothers. Now, the second wife of Rav Acha had a daughter from a different husband. So you follow, it was a second marriage for both Rav Acha and his wife. Okay? Now the daughter's name from a different marriage between Mrs. Rav Acha and so-and-so, her name was Amar. So now Rav Chia and Amar were Achim Meha'em. They were maternal brother and sister. Okay, so let's go over it one more time. Amar and Rav Chia came from the same mother. Okay? But Aibo and Amar were not related at all. Why is that so? Because again, Aibo was from the first wife, whereas Rav Chia was from the second wife. So Rav Chia is now a brother to Amar because they both shared the same mother. Now the Gemara tells the following story. Aibo and Amar got married because again they weren't related to each other. And who was born from that marriage? Rav was born from that marriage. So the Gemara says, Rav bar Achua de Rabbi Chia. Rav is the son of Aibo, because Aibo was married and had married Amar, right? Amar, we said, and had Rav as a son. So Rav is the son of Aibo, and now Rav Chia, who's the brother of Aibo, half brother at least, becomes the uncle of Rav. So Rav's father's name is Aibo, and his uncle's name is Rav Chia. Rav Chia and Aibo, as we said before, were half brothers. They each had a different mother, but they had the same father of Acha. Ubar Achte. And he was also the son of Amar, correct? Because again, there was a marriage relationship between Aibo and Amar. And Amar was a sister, a half-sister, to Rav Chia from the mother's side. So Kisolik, when Rav went from Bavel Lahasam to Eretz Yisrael, and that's where Rav Chia, his uncle, lived, Amalahu, his uncle, Rav Chia, turns to Rav and says to him, Aibo Kayam, is Aibo, meaning your father, still alive? Amalei, so Rav says, Ima Kayemes? Notice, why don't you ask about my mother, who's your sister, half-sister? Right, that's, what was her name? Ema, right? Amalei, so again he says, Ima Kayemes? Is my sister still alive? Meaning your mother? Amalei, Aibo Kayam, why don't you ask me whether my father is alive? Why are you asking about my mother? So basically, what Rav Chia is meant to understand is that both his brother and his sister had died already. But Rav didn't want to give that message over. He didn't want to be the Mavasa to tell them that his brother and his sister had died, which is called Motzi Diba Huksil. Amalei L'Shamei, So once Rav Chiya understood that his brother and his sister died, he tells his Heizbacher, you know, Shammai is like his servant, Chalotzli min Oli, take off my shoes. One of the various malachos that an Eved does for his master is to take off his master's shoes. And this indicates that I'm in Avelus, because an Avel is not allowed to wear shoes. V'holech klei kelei achare lebeis hamerchatz. Now, this is very strange, because he's telling his shamei to bring him to the bathhouse. Now, an Avel is not allowed to bathe in a bathhouse. So what's going on here? Holach Rav Chiya miyad lebeis hamerchatz kidei lelamein halacha l'talmidim. Apparently Rav Chiya wanted to teach something to his talmidim. What was he trying to teach them? Shmamina tlas. He taught them three different halachas. Shmamina number one, that Avel, even if he finds out after a long period of time that he had lost one of his relatives, his osu benila sasandal, nevertheless he has to take off his shoes. Okay, that's called the shmur rechoko, when you hear about something that happened way earlier. Ushmamina shmur rechoko eno helges el yom echad. In other words, that he only had one day of Avelus. Normally Avelus is 7 days, but here it was Avelus Rechoka, Shmur Rechoka. He found out about something that happened many, many months or maybe even years earlier. So he only has one day of Avelus. Ushmamino Mitzas Hayom Kekulo. And not only that, but he doesn't even have to observe the entire day. So for 1 hour, he was knowing Avelus, took off his shoes, and that was considered like a full day, and immediately after he went to the bathhouse to bathe. And that teaches us that his avelus is only 1 day, and mixes hayom kikulo, not even a full day, in the case of a shmur rechoka. Okay. Now, we have a few more lines. Let's see. What time is it? All right, I'll just read it quickly. Hahud, because this will bring us to Masechta Pesachim, finally. Hahud di Omar, there was a person who said, anytime he did business, he said, Donu Dinai. In other words, whenever he had some sort of business transaction, he would say, you know, we have to like go to a judgment. I guess he was very liturgous, you know. Amri, and people said about him, Hashmamino, Midanka, see, he must be a descendant of Shevet Dan. V'chsiv, Dan Yadin Amo Kachad Shivtei Yisrael. That Dan is always involved in judgment, in some sort of court case.
So this means this case was amongst people from Shevet Dan.
Just 1 second. I thought it meant that that he himself was from Shevet Dan. Let me borrow you, Gemara, for just a minute, Phil, if you don't mind.
The pasuk says, "Dan Yadin." So
I'll give it right back. Let me just. I thought it meant that he was from Shevet Dan. Just give me a second here. Okay. So he says that Yaakov blesses Dan, that his descendants. So this is the Marsha says that his descendants will succeed in obtaining justice for themselves. In other words, it doesn't mean that the descendants of Dan would be judges, but rather that their descendants would always get a good judgment. They would get a fair judgment. Hahudavi ka'azel v'omar. There was someone who was proud of himself, and he went out to the seashore. And he would say, Achif Yoma Asisna Birosa. So here's a person who would boast about the fact that we went out to the seashore, he could build Birosa. Birosa means castles. And apparently he was an expert at shipping or something that had to do with the seashore, and they found that he was from Shevet Zvulun, because the bracha that that Yaakov Avinu bestowed upon Shimon Bulan is that he will be able to deal with commerce on the seashore, L'chof Yavim Yishkon. And that was his broch. And that brings us back to Masechta Pesachim.
So you can even tell what Shevet somebody is from the way they talk.
Yeah, you can see that their blessing came from being descendants of that particular Shevet, which received that blessing from Yaakov Avinu.
Wow.
So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a good Shabbos. And